Blog Talk Radio.
Get up, stand up, stand up for your rights. Get up, stand up, stand up for your rights. Get up, stand up, stand up for your rights.
Preacher man, oh, tell me, heaven is on the gear. I know you don't know what life is really worth. It's a all that Peter told. After the story has never been told, so now you see the light. Hey, stand up for your rights. Come on,
get up. Stand up for your rights. Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your rights. Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight.
Most people think great God will come from the sky, take away everything and make everybody feel high. But if you know what life is worth, you would look for yours unhurt. And now you see the light, you stand up for your rights. Yeah,
get up, stand up.
Yeah, yeah.
Stand up for your rights.
Greetings, everyone. Today is Sunday, January 4th, 2015, and welcome to the first broadcast of Moving Spirits of Color in this new year. I am one of your hosts, Tamara Williams, founder and artistic director of Moving Spirits Incorporated and founder of Moving Spirits of Color. And our next host, Maxine, are you here?
As well as the advocacy director for Tamara LaDonna Moving Spirits and regular co-host of the broadcast, of course, as well. I welcome you as all to this broadcast and hope you are listening in.
Great. Thank you, Maxine. We missed the first part of your introduction. Can you just say the first two lines over again?
I'm sorry. Again, for all those who did not hear the first time, my name is Maxine Montalis, and I'm the Advocacy Director for Tamara LaDonna Moving Spirits, as well as co-host of the broadcast.
Okay, great. Thank you. So before we get in with our guest, let's go over a little bit of news since we haven't spoken online since the beginning of December. So I would like to take some time to bring light into the news of some recent deaths. 18-year-old Shanique Proctor died in Bessemer City, in a Bessemer City jail, and her death was ruled a drug overdose recently. However, there's over 7,000 people asking for answers from the State Bureau of Investigation and the FBI. The story from the autopsy and from the police department of Shanique's death while in their custody does not necessarily add up. So there's a petition on change.org in which many thousands of people are asking for further investigation into this death, and we'll give further information on that at the end of the show. There's Tasha Thomas, 26, who was the girlfriend of John Crawford, who died recently in a car accident on New Year's Day. John Crawford was shot and killed by the police in Beaver Creek in the Walmart there last August. And there's also, unfortunately, the death of Tanisha Anderson, who was a mentally ill woman who also died in police custody. And that death was recently ruled a homicide. So we are saying this in awareness, one, but also in giving condolences to those families. And also I would like to say that I wish that they also rest in peace and power. Additional news includes some protests happening. If anyone is in the L.A. area, or if you just want to know about what's happening, there are protesters at the LAPD headquarters in downtown L.A. They formed there after the release of the autopsy results of Ezell Ford, who was killed by police officers on August 11th of last year. The protesters there are demanding to meet with Police Chief Charlie Beck. And if you would like more information about that, please follow Black Lives Matter on Facebook or join their website, blacklivesmatter.org. There's also Ferguson protesters occupying the St. Louis, or they were, I don't think they're there anymore, but they were occupying the St. Louis Metropolitan Police Department. This was on New Year's Eve, December 31st, demanding that the citizens reclaim power due to the full neglect and violence on behalf of the police department towards the community. So for more information on what happened there and what their next steps are, please go to the freethoughtproject.com to learn more about what's happening there in Ferguson. Maxine, do you have any additional thoughts or comments?
I simply want to let the audience know that all the resources and any websites or links that we mentioned on the broadcast will be uploaded in the file document for our group, our Facebook group for Moving Spirits of Color. So please keep that in mind going forward in the broadcast.
Thank you. Maxine, do you mind sharing the mission of this show again with us?
Yes, the mission of this show is to bring awareness, discussion, and action to concerns for artists of color. Our aim is action and activism in the work that we are providing through this media forum. We ask that our audience engage with active listening, questioning, and critical thought to all ideas shared on this platform. So please provide your thoughts, concerns, and feedback in all things we set forth to do.
Yes, so please make sure that you follow us on Facebook, and if you have any questions, if you want to share any thoughts about something you heard on the broadcast, or if you missed maybe contact information for one of our guest speakers, please write to us on the Facebook group page, and we check it every day. We can definitely get back to you quickly. Okay, great. So on to the speakers that we have today. Our first speaker will be Lila Aisha Jones. I'm very happy and pleased to introduce her. We met many years ago in Florida. And Lila Aisha Jones is the founder of Flyground, a movement performance company that artistically archives and rethinks the intersecting lineages of the African, Afro-Black diaspora, and Black U.S. lived experiences. Her work is focused in the areas of memoir, social commentary, pop culture, modern dance, and down-home diasporic movement practices. She won a 2013 Dance USA Philadelphia Rocky Award for her choreography and performance in her work, Native Portals of Lynching and Love, presented by the 2012 First Persons Arts Festival. A Tallahassee, Florida native who resides now in Philadelphia, she has studied at the Jose Limon Dance Institute, Dagara Institute of Music and Dance, Ghana, L'École des Sables Senegal, and with Dance Brazil. She has facilitated courses, lectures, residencies, choreographic projects, and collaborative projects at the Muhlenberg College in PA, Bennington College in Vermont, California State University, Texas Women's University, Pinelands Creative Workshop, Barbados, and at L'École des Sables Senegal. In 2010, she co-founded with Denine Richberg the Requisite Movers, which assist in the development and production of work by Black females and women, choreographers of the African descent. Her website is flygroundera.com. And welcome, Lila. Are you here?
Yes, I'm here. Hello.
Okay. Yes, thank you. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. I'm really, I really want to show my support for the work that you all are doing. It's amazing, amazing work, it's very needed, very needed.
Great. So if I mispronounced anything in your introduction, please feel free to correct. And also, do you mind just sharing a little bit more information about the work that you're doing there in Philadelphia, as well as other work that you've been doing? Because you're all over and you're giving to so many different communities. So do you just mind giving us a little bit more detail about the work that you're into?
Yes, sure. I'm engaged in several facets, mostly in the dance world. I would consider myself to be living with my work, but I'm an educator. I do performances and workshops and residencies at Philadelphia area schools, and also through other programming such as Live Connections, which gives music education to schools that do not have art in their schools. So that's one facet of the work that I do. Most of my work with children is focused on community-based work and how to work together as individuals that have talent, but how to use that talent towards functioning as a community, how to live in someone else's ideas and not have it always be about your idea or yourself or what you're into, but learning how to respect other cultures and just really respect other people so that we can, you know, live together in a way where our talents are not muffled by our processes with community, but somehow the community, being a part of a community, can enhance the gifts that we're able to give and also at the same time simultaneously enhance what's happening with the community. So that's one facet. As an educator, I also work from kindergarten also through the university system. So and I think much of my work ties into this idea of the individual as a part of a community and also the self-work that it takes to deal with charged issues. So just for example, in my choreographic work, Native Portals, of Lynching and Love, a lot of the transformative process not only happened for the audience but for the people involved in the work, the dancers. Within my choreographic process, and I also teach this when I'm teaching choreography at the university level, but just how to process charged issues in the body, how to facilitate a deep understanding of not only how that's affecting your psyche, but how you move in the day-to-day, how you move in performance, how you work together in a community of dancers as a performer, and then how that extends out. It's actually just a microcosm of how you function in the general community. The way that you move inside of a smaller dance community is, you know, a smaller version of how you engage with larger society. So I think that the body is a really fertile place for figuring out and processing very charged issues like race and class and gender. And I do a lot of improvisational techniques and methods that allow us to work through, and of course dialogue as well, because dialogue and writing to me are also very engaging ways to work with each other, sharing, being inside someone else's movement experience, and just how that builds a certain type of respect for the multiple processes and social engagement that we have in the U.S. or that you can choose to have. Not everybody's having that, but you can choose to have that sort of engagement. So that's sort of kind of ties up a little bit of kind of the artistic and educational work that I do. And yeah, I'm working on a new work right now. I'm working on for Native Portals. That is extending out, and this probably goes a little bit into more of the questions you'll ask me later. But I'll just briefly say that I'm working on turning Native Portals of Lynching and Love into. It was filmed by a really amazing filmmaker, Tiana M, who's also won the Leeway Transformation Award, which is an award for people who are doing work around social justice. She filmed the live performance. We are working on turning that into a actual film that can be viewed in dance film world, but also social justice and arts activism and world, and also at high schools. And I'm also working with a diversity coordinator at one of the Friends schools in Philadelphia to create a program that can travel to different high schools where they view the piece about lynching, and then we have a discussion and dialogue, and they create transformation projects from that. So my most recent work is called Plight Release, and it has a lot to do with Afrocentricity and how that those values are embedded in my current way of being, and also how those values I feel like extend to humanity, because I feel like a lot of what Black people in the United States have contributed is not recognized. I should give a really clear example. Recently there was a study that was kind of circulating around Facebook about how memory is in the blood. And every time that has come up for me as a conversation in more academic worlds, it was always, kind of pushed to the side as like, oh, you know, whatever. But as soon as somebody does it that is not of color, and I mean, this idea of blood memory has been circulating the Afrocentric and African-centered communities for years and years and years, but there was no what we call proof. And so now that, you know, a certain white privileged echelon of people scientists have started to come out and say that this is true, it's now this thing that we can study. So there's these gates and these barriers to what the philosophical contributions are of the Black community to humanity, and I really want to start to flesh out more clearly and document and archive the kind of philosophical elements and ideas that the U.S., particularly the U.S. Black community, have offered to humanity and to the overall social experience, and let that credit go where it should be.
Great. Thank
Hello?
You for that. Yes. Maxine, do you have, I'm sorry, Leela, I actually dropped, my call dropped, so I just came in the middle of what you were saying. But Maxine, do you mind starting with questions for Leela?
Yes. Leela, I mean, thank you for sharing more about information with the audience about your work and how the ways in which you engage the community in Philadelphia and beyond. And I'd like to direct the conversation now more to what happened on December 13th in terms of the community protest that you organized that day in Philadelphia. And I just wanted to get some information as to, you know, how that came about, what went into the work to bring the artists together for that protest, and if you could just share with the audience how that came about.
Yeah, absolutely. I was actually just on Facebook, and I feeling rather angry about what has been happening recently, you know, in the past couple of years with these events, the national aspects of the events of unarmed Black people being killed and people who imagine themselves to be enforcers of the law are actually people who are sworn in as law officers. And I just posted that I wanted to find out what people were doing. I was contacted by Tamara, and she said that Dancing for Justice New York was occurring. And I said, well, let me see what I can do here in Philly. And it kind of spun off from there. I reached out to people. People started to write me back. It really happened within, I think, a week. We knew about it a week ahead of time, and I consider myself to be the lead centralizer organizer. I kind of centralized folks that I knew in the dance community, and I also reached out to Chicago, Vershawn Sanders there, and to a couple of people in Boston, and then to Christina DeRusse in Detroit, And so that kind of helped to get even more cities, I think, involved in the process. They reached out to other people. But in Philadelphia, we really knew that we did not have enough time to do the work for a real a march that would be about the systematic change that needs to occur. And I really there's extensive work that goes behind actually creating a situation where you're going to affect the system in a deep way. And so once we realized the time constraint, I really asked, and with Jumatatu Poe, who was somebody else I was in consultation with, that we create something that would be a march that was more for mourning and a centralized outcry and kind of a stand against injustice, instead of trying to focus on it being about a systematic change situation. So it was in Philadelphia, it turned out to be a march that had very clear choreographed moments to gather attention, to make people pay attention, to have people notice so that they could read the signs, they could hear what we were saying, they could hear the song that we were singing. And I'm sorry it escapes me right now, but it is a song that is circulating right now a lot in some of the protests. I can't think of the exact name of it, but I can probably get you that information later from Juma. But and to also, you know, gather ourselves in on a main street, which is Broad Street in Philadelphia, walk towards City Hall. We did actually march in the street. We did not just take the sidewalks. We marched down Broad Street, which is a very busy street, and we experienced some things that were very reminiscent, you know, lightly, not even touching, you know, what happened back in the 60s. But we definitely noticed that being in the street was something that people did not like. But we also had a lot of support for that as well. So we walked and we stopped maybe about 3 or 4 times, and we did choreographed demonstrations that were led by specific people in the community, namely Jumatatu Poe, Shannon Murphy, myself. And then once we got to City Hall, Denise Osayande led an Adinkra symbol engagement, because she is very deeply embedded in the Ghanaian traditions of dance. And I wanted to make sure that whatever people led, they really had a really clear understanding to kind of avoid the cultural appropriation aspect of some of the work that we sometimes do, and we're trying to think of these ideas and we want to do things that are really cool. But I feel like it's important to have people leading that really understand the culture of which you're pulling from. So the improvisational aspects were done by people who live in that world consistently and who lead that kind of group improving and flocking. And then Janine, Osayande led the Adinkra aspect of it, and then we also did a call out of over 70 names. This was kind of the mourning element, but we did a call out of over 70 names while we were in this Adinkra symbol, and our response was, "Your life matters, rest in peace." And so I think that was another very powerful moment to actually stand there and to listen to all of the names of, you know, the people that we could gather. Of course, that's not the whole list, but the people that we could gather. And so it culminated with that. With that was the last thing we did as a group. And then we had a capoeira group do in the whole session with a roda, which is a circle of resistance. And where they actually do some of them. Capoeira, let me just say this really quickly for people who are not aware, but capoeira is a form of resistance. It's a dance, it's music and song, and it's also a martial art form that was used during the time of slavery and it was used as a form, I'll just say, it was used as a form of resistance against injustice in Brazil, according to race. And we decided that we wanted to end with something that was well-established culturally, that people really know the history of it, they really know what it is, they know what it was for, but it was also a movement practice. That's basically what occurred with the Philadelphia Dancing for Justice event.
That sounds very powerful. Yes. Go ahead, Maxine.
Yeah, I was fortunate enough to see pictures from that protest, as well as read a blog post from one of the participants, and it sounded like it was a very powerful gathering. And I applaud you for leading the way and organizing it and making it happen. I'm just curious, has there been any follow-up or gathering since then with the people who participated and helped you put it together?
No, not yet, but we have a debrief scheduled for the 12th, and at that time, we'll pretty much do a reflection on what happened, you know, what was really effective for people during that, at least in the core, the central people who organized it, what was really felt effective during that protest or march or outcry, and what how we would like to move forward as a group. I can tell you a little bit about my own commitment to it, even though I can't speak for the group and, like, where everything will probably end up. But for myself, I think that right now we're probably – I'm thinking of suggesting for us to commit to a year of doing something monthly or bi-monthly, and there could be various versions of what that might be. I think the march was very powerful. It allowed a lot of people to be involved at one time, a lot of variety of people, because also this is – although this is being led by the dance community – we had people that came. I forgot an important element, which was that we had musicians. We had live musicians there. We had about 20 percussionists and capoeiristas who played birimbaos, which, again, that birimbao tradition and that capoeira tradition and the percussion tradition comes from a long history of resistance and protest and the call to action. So it ended up being a very powerful element in this process. And Juma Tatu created a dirge, which is a walk of mourning, and you know, that happens, you know, sometimes before funerals and, you know, things like that. So we had a choreographed march that we also did along with the musicians, and that music did call people to action. People walked out of buildings on Saturday morning who were working and joined us, and they told me after, you know, that they were that they did leave work and they didn't go back. And so, I mean, there was a good amount of people who actually left the moment that they were in when they heard the music and they saw us outside and came and joined us. And that was also a very powerful thing that I don't know if I had kind of expectation that that would maybe somebody would hear and join, but, you know, people leaving work, I mean, I definitely felt like that was very powerful. But we will be having a debriefing meeting, maybe making a commitment of a year and then revisiting what are the next things that need to happen. But I think the march was a very powerful aspect that will probably continue either monthly or bi-monthly. There's been conversation. I've seen some of the list of the overall Dancing for Justice NYC, which is, you know, how I kind of got involved in this in the first place, about pop-up protests. And we actually had been talking about that before I read it, and what that would mean and what spaces we could do that kind of work in. So I definitely think, and I think another strong aspect for me, and again, I can't speak for everybody because we haven't had that conversation quite yet, but is that the dance community needs to actually be the change. And I mean, I know this is a quote that is used often, but what I mean by that is we need to maybe do some work in our own community. So maybe we need to invite somebody like the People's Institute to come in and actually do a workshop with the people who are organizing this. So I really believe that when people change is when the system will change. I think the outside-in approach, I think we need all types of approaches. I won't knock any approach. If you're just sitting down with your son and you're having a conversation about this, that's work that needs to be done because many people are not doing that. So or if you want to help with voting and that's the way that you want to engage, I feel like all of those multiple elements are needed. But I do think that really deeply it's people that need to change, because if these people that are going out to do their jobs are scared of Black people, are these people that are going out to do their jobs are ignorant about, you know, crime statistics, are these people that are going out to, and then they end up killing somebody, you know, that means that the self-work, that deep work, you know, that makes you question who you are and makes you process how you're engaging and contributing to the problems in the society, to me, what will actually change the system, people that are continually doing that work.
Yes. You actually kind of answered my next question, which was what's the importance of these movements that are happening right now? what's the importance of the awareness that the work that you and the community in Philadelphia did in December and are continuously doing, what is the importance of bringing that awareness right now?
I can say a little bit more about that, but yeah, I would say it's twofold. I think there's a self-internal work that needs to happen that I personally feel like is the core problem, that people are not doing the work around race. I mean, this country, we all know this. We all know this country is founded on slavery. There's recently a lot of literature. I mean, there's tons and tons of literature about this. But if we're not taking the time to, again, do the self-work about how we're contributing, how we're co-signing, how we don't want to step out, you know, we're at a holiday party and we're drinking some wine and somebody says something crazy and then we just kind of keep drinking our wine, you know, I think us being able to know where we stand, where our social location is in this process, and this is for people of all colors, you know, and then being able to actually stand up for that in the moment when it's necessary, which I think are many moments where we don't want to offend anybody and we don't want to, but this is offensive. Like, people getting killed on the street is offensive. You know, it's not, it's offensive, it's sad, there's not enough words for it. You know, it's just, it's really disorienting and dysfunctional. And I mean, there's just so many, there's not enough words to really explain it. And I feel like, again, the disruption that has to occur is inside of all of us. And we have to keep facilitating spaces and places to do that work. And I really believe in the facilitation of that by people who have been doing it for years and years and years. And all that's coming to me right now is the People's Institute, but I know there are other organizations out there that are also facilitating and doing this work. And they're doing it in different ways. There's people that are facilitating it just for white people or people of European descent in the U.S. that wanted to work through this. And I also believe that sometimes it's important for, you know, the black community to be in a room doing this work, the white community being, immigrants being in a room doing this work, because every immigrant walks into the black-white dichotomy. Like, when you move to this country, we may not talk about it. It may not be an open conversation. And it's really not, actually, unless you, like, personally have conversations with immigrants that come here. But you will kind of see them have to make a choice in a way. It may not even be conscious, but lean to one side or the other, depending on who they are coming into this country. Because the goal is success, you know, to have the American dream. So, you know, how do you do that? And, of course, immediately you're faced with this black-white dichotomy when you start talking about the roots and the history of the American dream. You know, who do you want to align yourself with and what are you dealing with? And, again, these are things that we don't talk about. I feel like I'm going off subject a little bit. But so I'll get back to it. So there's this deep internal you know, there's this deep internal work that I feel like we all need to do, and we need to help each other do, and we need to push each other to do. But then there's this group work, this community work, this activist work. And I think that comes from you just figuring out your social location, your capacity. So I had written down, you know, self goals, community goals, activist goals, art goals. And then within all of those things, once you see what that is for you or where you fit into that, and again, where you're located socially, gender, class, race, what are your privileges that you have gathered over the years? And then what are your disadvantages, if there are some? You know, what do you have to deal with on a daily basis, or what do you not have to deal with on a daily basis according to who you are? You know, finding that social location and then finding the intersections and then figuring out what your commitment is to this. Because we all can stand up and say, you know, but that's the kind of work. You know, we can all stand up and say, oh, this is really bad, I'm so sad about this, you know. But it's just going to take more than that. It's really going to take more than that to actually come to these solutions, a sustained longevity of process, which is why I feel like a year commitment is really important. It's still, years are a very short amount of time. But, you know, these are not one hit, you know, you just do it and then things get better. I mean, I think we all know that. But I think we have to push each other to commit to the work, the self-work and the more environmental community social work. And I think a key to that, again, is figuring out where you are in connection to this and in your life, and then committing to whatever it is. If it's about voters for you, commit to that. Make yourself commit to that for a year. If it's about donating to the families that have lost, commit to that for a year. You know, like whatever it is, commit for an extended, sustained amount of time. So you can actually see how that works in the world. You can keep up with that and then decide if that's where you want to stop or if you want to move into another place. But I think this continual engagement with the issues, with the problems, with the challenges, with the charged issues is really what is going to bring about any type of change. You know, there are still people who are really not convinced that it will ever change. Even though we've had some changes, to go back to something like this feels, there's no word for it. But it doesn't feel like doesn't feel like progress.
Yes, I agree. And I just want to reiterate something that you said. A few things. Awareness and action and commitment, and also disruption. I think that really resonated with me when you said that. Lila, for people that may not be familiar, can you please give us a little bit more information about the People's Institute?
Yeah, the People's Institute is an organization out of New Orleans, and just please forgive me if this is just off the top of my head, but my first engagement with them was with an Urban Bushwoman Summer Institute, and Urban Bushwoman is a performance organization, but also a community activist and social change organization. And it's a dance organization. So they have a touring company, but they also have summer institutes, which is a place for artists to engage in activist training methods, activities, performances to kind of cultivate their activist selves as artists. And they decided, that bringing in the People's Institute, I believe it's for race and beyond, and we can confirm that. But to do workshops that help to unearth race issues around white privilege, this is kind of repetitive, but racism and prejudice in our society here in the U.S., and to help artists, again, find their social location concerning these issues, and to give them tools and methods to bring more work that helps to solve the problem of institutional racism. And they really are focused on race. I mean, they do bring in intersectionality, the intersectionality of class and gender, but they're very adamant about that race needs to be talked about. Like everything leads back to race. Gender will lead back to race eventually. Class will lead back to race as a conversation because it all leads back to slavery in this country. And so they're very adamant about the conversation staying on race and racial issues, even though they're very aware that there are intersections and they support those intersections. But it's their mission to me is to really have a conversation about race and to make everyone socially locate themselves, find their contributions, their place where they co-sign this kind of activity, and their fears around it, their fears around this subject matter, their sadness, their pain, all of those things, to kind of unearth those to lead you to a place of being able to use methods and tools to actually become an activist within your work. Against racial injustice and institutionalized racism.
Yes, thank you for that. Maxine, do you have more questions for Lila?
Yes. I want to know, you mentioned People's Institute and gave information on that. Are there any other resources that you can think of off the top of your head that our audience can be engaged with or look into further as well in community work?
I don't have them off the top of my head, but I do know that there are two other ones, and I will definitely get you that information. I'll talk to the folks who I know are involved with them, and I'll get that information for you. The People's Institute is pretty easy to find online, so we can look that up and find that information. The other two, I'll have to get the names from from my contacts.
And also, I know you spoke at length about the internal work that people could be doing, as well as how to focus their commitment to community work as well. But do you have any special notes for particularly artists engaging in social work in terms of the work that they could be doing as well to engage further in social justice?
Well, again, you know, I think this, I think it goes back further than this, like, moment that's happening. I think, first of all of the work we do, I feel like we need to do more research, because I feel, personally, I feel a lot of dance lives on the surface of subject matter, and right now social justice, social issues is a hot topic in the dance world, and many people are getting on it, you know, as you say, riding the trend. And I feel like there's a lot of deep research that needs to be done about some of the work that is happening that is about social issues. So that's what I would say first. Get a researcher. I mean, again, I commend you all. If you have an advocacy director, like, that's a huge deal. Like, if the director is already not an advocacy director, then you need an advocacy director. You need a researcher. You need somebody who can allow your work to be more deeply entrenched in what is happening around the subject matter that you are presenting. And I think we're all working through this. We're all figuring this out. And I think the people that are doing the work, they really do want to bring awareness around subject matter. But it doesn't make the work less. It doesn't make the grit less. We still have to go into it. A desire to do it is great, but it does take more than just our own ideas. I think that you have to multiply the information that you're offering to people and not just your own personal perspective, because our personal perspectives are skewed and they are biased. And so, you know, we have to do some research around these and get the history of some of the ideas that we want to talk about. So that's what I would say is a starting place to me, is like, do the work in your own work first, the creating. And then other ideas in terms of having engagement in your work or with your work is one thing that I'm starting to play around with is having town hall mics. So if I'm dealing with a charge issue, let's just use lynching as an example. The next time that I put that piece up, I really want to have these town hall mics where audience members can come up and make statements about the political feelings around some of these issues while the performance is still happening. And I mean, again, this takes a whole kind of process of planning and, you know, how are you going to do that? How are you going to choreograph something while people are talking that you're not ready for? But I'm interested in creating, you know, civic conversations that are not just mine, that involve the audience, that allow them to state their opinions and ideas, shift the performance in some ways during my actual concert performances. Another idea that we are playing around with is having demonstrations or installations around this particular subject matter of the killing of unarmed Black people at different events that are happening, especially dance events, but it can be any artistic event, to kind of disrupt the moment and, like, place people in a certain awareness and engagement with these issues when they really just feel like they're coming to see a piano concert or whatever, but just layering a little bit more how all of this is connected. And as much as we want to make and compartmentalize that we're going to see a show and the show is about whatever topic it is about, you know, that this other thing has nothing to do with that. We want to disrupt that a little bit more, because what we live every day and what our communities are living every day is absolutely a commentary upon what we do as artists. So even if that person that is doing that performance is not completely engaged in this conversation, making the audience be engaged in the conversation is them making a statement. They're making a statement by even allowing you to be there, that they have some connection to this work. So that's another way that we've thought about it. We've also thought about having civic engagement boards available for audience members that are just maybe in the lobby where people can write things about a particular charged subject matter. And again, it can be this subject matter that we're discussing now, but just some type of way for opinions to be voiced and for opinions outside of the artist's voice to be considered. So I think those would be my suggestions and of things to explore in your own work, in your how to be an activist in your own work. And, I mean, it is about disrupting your process, because when you start allowing other people to say things during your performances and to make their opinions known, you know, it's a scary place, because you can't always control that. But I think that we're far out of control with what's happening in our communities right now concerning, again, the killings of Black people. So I think that, and I do believe this extends globally out into the world, but I also feel like it's important, again, this is our home, we live here. Start with human lives matter. It doesn't start with, oh, how does this intersect with the global violence? Okay, that's fine, and I'm with that. Mm-hmm. But I feel like that should not replace the conversation of Black Lives Matter.
Yes, I agree, Leila. And from that place of disruption, if we're open to it, learning can also happen. And so thank you for all of those suggestions. And I really encourage our listening audience, if any one of those just kind of even made your eyes open a little bit, just try it. Because from trying, that's the only way you'll find out if these type of things will work for you and your audience and the community in which you're involved in. Maxine, do you have any further questions?
Actually, Leila covered a lot of the questions I had in mind already.
Great.
Thank you so much for your thoughts and information that you've provided. It's a wealth of information that you've provided and thought-provoking statements that you've made in this work.
Oh, yeah, you're so welcome. And I can give you my contact information at any time. And well, I guess I could just say it now. If anybody's interested in getting involved in Philadelphia Dancing for Justice or just arts activism, I have a lot of connections. My email is flyinthesky@gmail.com. My name is Leila Aisha Jones, and they gave you my website, flygroundera.com. You can also contact me there. And I'm on Facebook as Leila Aisha, and we also have a Dancing for Justice Philly Facebook page.
Oh, great. Leila, do you mind staying on the line for a few more minutes while we speak with Mia in New York?
No.
Well, she's actually in Texas, but through New York.
No problem.
Yeah, do you mind?
Absolutely.
Okay, great. Mia, are you here?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes, dear. Great. Just making sure you're still with us. Maxine, do you mind giving the introduction for Mia today?
Of course. Amia Austin Edwards is the founder of Purpose Productions, a company that supports artists and activists in the manifestation of purposeful work that seeks to unify and develop our world community. She's also an editor and contributor to The Dance Enthusiast and was recently named a John R. Munger Research Fellow for Dance USA. Her performing career began in her mother's womb, developed in Atlanta, Georgia at Total Dance /Dance@Goal Productions Incorporated, and was further formalized through Tri-Cities Visual and Performing Arts Magnet High School and New York University's Tisch School of the Arts. Since her transition from marketing and communications director at Brooklyn Arts Exchange, Purpose Productions has had the pleasure of supporting dance artists such as Adia Tamar Whitaker and Marjani Forte, theater artists such as Melanie Jones and LaTanya Phipps, organizations such as 651 Arts and Stoops, initiatives such as Dancing While Black and Camille A. Brown's The Gathering, among others. Welcome, Mia.
Thank you.
I thought I lost you for a second. So I guess we could start off by talking about how your activism is taking place at this time and what work are you doing in the community through your art at this time.
At this time, I am just generally focused on the importance of healing. I think that one of the common threads in conversations that I've seen happen amongst activists and people of color in general, and Black people very specifically, is the reality that we do a whole lot, and sometimes we forget to take care of ourselves. And so that's a really, really simple base layer of what my focus is at this moment, in art, in life, in activism, in all facets of what I'm doing. What happened recently for me when the non-indictment for Darren Wilson was announced, I received a call from a close friend who was like, yo, can we like get some people together and like go somewhere and like talk this out or something? And I was like, sure. Let me see if I could find a space. So I made some calls. The Stuyvesant Mansion, which is a historic mansion in Bedford-Stuyvesant in Brooklyn, houses a number of wonderful organizations, one of which is Ancient Song Doula Services. And Ancient Song Doula Services, along with the Brooklyn Movement Center, were kind enough to open their space to us. And basically what we did was I just sent out a mass text message to my friends, and I was like, so if you need a space to come and just be, heal, talk, cry, whatever you want to do, I'm just going to sit here all day. I'm just going to sit here all day, and I'm just going to be available in the space. And me and my partner, Timothy Jones, and my good friend, Archie, and whoever else entered the room were just there for an entire day available. And then at the end of the day, we closed with a Reiki circle that was led by Aisha Domain, who is a Bed-Stuy-based healer and artist and mother and a wonderful person in a number of different ways. And Reiki is just one of many practices that promotes healing and health through the movement of energy and the laying of hands. So we collectively did some Reiki, and then we went to eat and kept talking and talked some more, and then we decided we would come back together whenever we could. We gathered once more after that, again at Ancient Song, and then the conversation I had with Archie and Tim was basically that it would be nice to do something once a month that is centered around healing, but it's also very much an open space that just allows for whatever is necessary. And figuring out whatever is necessary has been an active listening process the whole time.
Great, thank you. Can you talk a little bit more about why self and community healing is so important always, but especially now as we're going on through this movement for Black Lives? Speak a
sure.
little bit more about that.
Mm-hmm. Sure. So my partner, Tim, is in his 30s, and he often talks about a point when he was 25, and I'm 26, so just as a matter of perspective. So he talks about a point when he was 25, and he just got burned out. He had been doing activist work. He had been marching. He had been organizing. He had been a board member on an arts activist organization. He had been in a collective, he had been performing. And so he just got to the point where he was doing all of this stuff and was like, okay, I think I want to go take a nap now. Not literally, but, you know. So that just being one of many examples I've heard of folks who are really, 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 really actively doing the work and, quite frankly, forget about themselves. And I've seen and heard and grown up with stories and stories on stories on stories. And one of the things that has become very important to me is understanding the full spectrum of even our activist histories. And so, you know, my dad was always very clear with me in not only telling me all the wonderful things that happened, but also telling me all the things that didn't work out so well. And one of those things that didn't work out so well for a lot of people is that they got to a point where they either got burned out or they got jaded or they were so exhausted by doing everything that they were doing that they became angry and they weren't supported. And so not to mention one of the most memorable moments of my childhood, there's I think it was a made-for-TV movie, but there's a movie called Selma, Lord Selma that was about the Bloody Sunday March on the Edmund Pettus Bridge down in Alabama back in the 60s, and I remember vividly there's a scene in that movie where they are organizing in the church, getting ready to go march, and there's a bunch of women who are preparing, like, medical kits and first aid kits, and there's some women who are cooking, and so there's this understanding through that scene that as much as important as it is for people to go march, or for people to go organize, or for people to go do whatever activist work they're doing in public, there needs to be a space for them to return to be fed, to be nourished, to be healed, to be cared for. And I used to always say the joke of, like, when the movement comes, my job is going to be cooking and hugging people. And that was my joke as a kid. And that's really, I've really been looking for ways to manifest that as an adult. So, it just really comes down to that being a way of sustaining the movement, because if we cannot sustain ourselves, then what are we, like, we just going to march till we fall over? That's not really going to work.
Yes. So my next question is, since oftentimes, and even when we're not in the middle of a civil rights movement, we don't, especially black women, black men, all lives as well, but we don't care for ourselves. Quite often the self is neglected. So can you give us any information or your thoughts on why you think that self-care and even in oftentimes in the black community, community care does not happen, especially like it did years ago in this day and time?
I think there are a lot of different reasons and ways to think about that. But the first thought that comes to mind to me is understanding your value. And understanding that you are so valuable that the movement, whether that be the, you know, at this moment very visible movement or the undercurrent constant movement against injustice that has been happening and continues to happen and will continue to happen, whether it's very visible or not, that cannot happen without you being well. And that's not something that is discussed. That's not something that is talked about. It's very easy to, you know, function in survival mode because of the numerous injustices that we experience, because of the great amount of miseducation that we are given. It's very common to be told that your life is not valuable in a number of subliminal ways at this moment. What you see on TV, what you see in music, what you see, like, in all these different ways. And so it's really easy to internalize and just really lose a value for yourself and start to focus on either survival or getting money or activism, or, like, there's so many other things that it's so easy to focus on, and it's really hard sometimes to actually stop and be like, but what about me? Because it feels selfish. And there's this perception that, you know, being selfish is bad. And so that those perceptions and those reinforced negative ideas just really become this cyclical support for the fact that, oh, I don't need to take care of me. I just need to do this. Oh, I don't need to, you know, if I do this external thing, then I'll be fine. And I think Lila made a really great point about the importance of that internal work and that self-work, because without that, we really can't push forward in any way that's actually sustainable and supportive.
Yes, thank you. Maxine, you have any? I know you do have more questions for Mia.
Yes, so you mentioned Reiki as one modality for self-healing. I want to know if there are others that you would suggest, because believe it or not, there are people who are not familiar with some of the modalities that they can, such as Reiki, that they can access to promote self-care for themselves. So any resources or modalities that you can mention towards that work?
Sure. So Reiki, Qigong is another recognized sort of Asian style of energetic healing and care. Tai Chi, which is a sort of martial art form that has grown out of Qigong. Martial arts in general, any kind of movement practice, yoga, Pilates, dance, then, you know, stepping away from the ideas of movement, writing, just free writing, whatever spiritual practice you have, whether that be going to a worship space, a church, a mosque, a synagogue, whatever that is for you, or, you know, your personal worship at home. I think that for me, a big part of healing is listening. And one of the things that came up in another really awesome space called Grieve and Breathe that was coordinated and organized by Maria Bauman, who's another dance artist, organizer, and amazing spirit, on New Year's Eve, actually. One of the things that came up by writer Ava Yacentua said that, you know, listen to your body. And I don't remember exactly how she worded it, but basically the gist was like, your body knows best, just listen and do what it says, and you'll be fine. But even learning how to listen to that is a skill. So, you know, meditation is another thing that some people choose, but really being able to listen and figure out what your body, your soul, your spirit, yourself needs is really the pathway to healing, in my opinion. And all of those other modalities and methodologies, you know, you people come into them in very different ways, but, you know, my feeling is that if you come at it from a place of, well, what do I need? And, you know, that I being a very collective I, that I being based in, you know, what do my bones need? What does my spirit need? What does my soul need? What does my heart need? What does my mind need? So being able to think about that I in a way that is not single-sided is also really important to really address all of those layers, because, you know, like Lila also brought up that collective memory. What do I need can also sometimes be related to what does my great-grandma need to get this kink out my back, because when she was on a field way back when, she kind of turked her back out a little bit, and I still have this kink on my back that I can't figure out how to get rid of. So it's that really, really, really deep listening that can really help support that pathway to healing and health and support.
Thank you for sharing that. And also, I know you mentioned the Stuyvesant Mansion and the doula and Reiki services that are provided there. Are there any other resources that you can mention for our audiences that they can access for self-care as well?
Yes. There are many. And I don't want to sit here and talk all day. But so as far as healers that I know personally, Aisha Deming is a Reiki healer. Freddie Pearson is another bedside-based healer who does Reiki and Qigong and Pilates and massage and energy work and a bunch of other physical health and support. Piper Anderson is an activist, artist, Reiki healer, and many, many other things. Educator. Maria Bauman, who I mentioned was also leading and organizing a space, the other things she did as a part of her workshop was a partner stretch, which is another another movement-based way of supporting and addressing the body. There is a sister named Adaku Uta, who is a wonderful healer and amazing spirit, who organizes a space called Harriet's Apothecary that's out in Crown Heights. I don't know how frequently it meets. I know there was a pop-up shop that featured not only healers but also artists. So there was jewelry for sale. There was actual art. There was a visual artwork for sale and a bunch of other things. They had peeling haircuts. So that Harriet's Apothecary space is another option. And then there was a you all can let me know the best way to share this with you all, and I'm pretty sure I already sent it to you, Maxine. There was a list that was put together earlier last fall that just listed a bunch of different healing spaces. That's just a simple Google document. I believe they're through New York, but they might be national. And so there's all of those as well.
Yes, you did send me that list, and so for our listeners, I'll make sure that will be uploaded as a file in the Moving Spirits of Color group as well.
So yeah, those are the things that come to mind immediately. I'll be shouting these. One of the other many things I do is run social media for a lot of different people, but also for myself. And so on my Facebook and Twitter profiles, I'll also be shouting out these folks that I named just as a way to also provide contact information for them.
Great. Thank you so much, Nia. Maxine, do you have more questions for Nia?
I think you summed up everything I had in mind to ask
yes.
with your answers. Thank you so much for sharing.
Yes, thank you, Nia. Going forward, I know both of you, Nia and Leela, you both mentioned actions that people can be doing going forward, community care, self-healing. Leela, you've mentioned really using whatever form of art a person has their passion in to start there as a form of awareness, action, and activism, reaching out to other organizations such as the People's Institute and so many other things. So on top of those, we've been given a lot of information. Are there any other things that you may have forgotten to say or you want to say now about actions or resources for any of our listeners that you would like to share, either you, Nia, or Leela?
Well, this is Leela, and I just wanted to just support the idea of the community healing aspect, because I feel like a lot of what was happening again in the protest in Philadelphia, I mean, we call it a protest, but I really feel like part of it was this coming together and being able to actually express the moment of disdain, the moment of pain, the moment of anger, and release that into a space, again, as opposed to a space for systematic change to occur or for it to be that kind of space. And again, I want to say that I feel like multiple spaces are important, and I want to, you know, really push that home, but I do really agree with Nia concerning healing, and that is a big part of it, because what to do after was something that we struggled with, and we end up just disseminating. I mean, we did the capoeira joda, which I think kind of helped to push the energy that had just happened into a space that had history, that had, you know, a certain kind of longevity of processing pain and charge issues and fighting against that. But I do feel like the healing aspect, finding spaces for healing, and I mean, there are a lot of spaces in that, and I do feel that sometimes we don't use our healers a lot. And I think we need to start to also, especially with Black Lives Matter, also use some of our healers and bring out the philosophers and the healers that have been working in the Afrocentric or African-centered communities and worlds, and the Black U.S. world, that may not have the same type of respect or unearthing or being used as much as some of the more established ways of healing, but they actually know how to do a libation. They've been doing it for years and years, you know, pulling people from the Yoruba community, from the Akan community, from the Black churches, you know, and like our aunts and uncles that know about healing practices that we don't really talk to them about that. Because the reason why these things don't happen continuously is because we don't have enough intergenerational conversation, as Nia was saying about her grandmother had the same kink in her back that I have now as being a young person, I believe she was saying. And like not having that conversation, not having enough conversation with our grandmother to actually know that they had a way of healing that or dealing with that at that time that we can bring forward. So in the same vein of what this is, I truly believe, like, going back to research, talk to your family, talk intergenerationally, have those conversations, because if we don't make space to have those conversations, we're just reinventing healing. We're starting over from square one over and over again for no reason. We have methods of healing. We have methods, philosophical ideas of and approaches to humanity and to the world. And I think that, you know, in terms of digging into, you know,
more resources and ways to be activists in this and healers in this, we need to continue to have those conversations. And it's not just about who's standing out as a leader. Sometimes it's about finding, like, again, the people in your family, the people that are right there in front of you that we just don't engage with because, again, we're socialized and we're programmed to be looking for program that, so that we're not, again, reinventing the wheel over and over again and starting over from scratch so these things can actually progress into social practices that we maintain and that we sustain.
I definitely agree, Leela. I think that all the folks you brought up in terms of the European community and the Italian community and, you know, all those wonderful people, it's really important to engage all healers and to support all healers in a way that's really open and honors the fact that, like I said, every body knows what it needs. And that body, each body having as many tools and options available to them really gives that body the opportunity to find what will best support their needs. And, you know, it makes me think of herbalists, and it makes me think of folks who work with crystals, and it makes me think of
yes,
the Native American healing community. So there's so much that is not that far away. And one of the other things, Leela, that you said that I really want to, like you said, drive home is that idea of it takes many, many entry points and many ways of working to really make this work happen. And one of the really great resources that came out last month was a document called 26 Ways to Be in the Struggle Beyond the Streets. It was created by Piper Anderson and a few other artists and activists and organizers that basically they made a list of 26 suggested activists actions from cooking for people to providing childcare to having healing spaces to being a self-care buddy. So just being accessible to a person to be like, hey, are you taking care of yourself? Just like that basic level of checking in to helping people fundraise. So, you know, if you have some friends who are like, hey, I want to give some money, I don't know where to give it. Okay, well, you know, I heard about this organization, you might want to check out this organization. Being a resource, providing information. If you're multilingual, translating information for, you know, folks who don't speak English and don't have access to the same kinds of information. And so that document was also really awesome in supporting that idea and really giving specific ways of manifesting that idea of all the different ways that folks can really engage in activism and movement building.
Wonderful. Thank both of you. Thank you, ladies, for that. I do want to just reiterate that the healing is in the blood, and it's been our history that these methods of healing and these all things that we've had in our past as things for our community to be strong and powerful have been taken away. But as you said, it's in the memory. It's in the blood memory. So I think our listening audience, if you're interested in learning or receiving information about maybe the Ifa, Yoruba, Akan traditions, please let us know. We also have connections to many people that practice and can give services in New York, in Philadelphia, in most major cities, and some smaller towns as well. So if you're interested in any of those healing traditions, please let us know. We can provide that information. Maxine, do you have more that you'd like to share?
At this time, no. I simply want to reiterate that a lot of the resources mentioned in this conversation will be in the Facebook group for this broadcast, so please support and join Moving Spirits of Color on Facebook. And you can also like the company's Facebook page, Tamara Ladon and Moving Spirits, as well to stay informed on the work we're doing as well as the resources mentioned throughout these broadcasts.
Great. So just really quick, I just want to mention a few things that will be posted and have been posted on the Moving Spirits of Color group page on Facebook. There's a petition for Mayor de Blasio and Commissioner Pratton to fire Officer Daniel Pantaleo. There is a petition for the investigation of the death of Shanique Proctor. There's a petition for justice for Dontre Hamilton, who was shot 14 times by a Milwaukee police officer. We have a list of independent black businesses for people to go online and shop. There's another petition for the National Action Against Police Brutality, and there's a link to support Zinette Chavez, who is the woman leading the National Action Against Police Brutality, so that she can speak. And she's an amazing public speaker, and she has a lot of information. Her child was killed by a police officer some years ago, and she's been traveling to different cities, and she needs funds to continue voicing on behalf of the community about police brutality and violence. There's also links to banks, online directory of Black-owned banks, if you are interested. Other resources, if you are interested in joining any type of protest or action or demonstration, FergusonAction.com has a list of all protests and events occurring around the United States. FergusonNext.com is also useful. I did want to offer a few books as resources as well during this broadcast. There is Policing the Lives of Black and Latino Boys by Victor Rios, Our Enemies in Blue by Christian Williams, Hunting for Dirtbags, Why Cops Over-Police the Poor and Racial Minorities, was written by Lori Beth Way and Ryan Patton, and The New Jim Crow, Mass Incarceration in the Age of Colorblindness, was written by Michelle Alexander, and it's a really, really informative read. Lila and Nia, could you both just share your contact information one more time? Lila first for the listening audience.
Again, I'm Lila Aisha Jones. My website for the artistic work that I do is flygroundera.com. You can email me about any of this, the justice work or the artistic work or the educational work, at flyground@gmail.com. Again, that's like fly in the sky, walk on the ground @gmail.com, one word, flyground. And those are the best two places to try to contact me. I also have a Facebook page, Lila Aisha. You're welcome to contact me there or through Dancing for Justice Philly, which is also on Facebook.
Great. Thank you, Lila. Nia?
Great. Ania Austin Edwards is my name. You can look me up on Twitter. I'm on Twitter as Kwanzaa Kid, Kwanzaa Kid, K-I-D. Saying that just made me remember the importance of that tradition, as well as another way of collective being and working. I'm on Facebook, and my website, my company's website, is purposeproductions.org, P-U-R-P-O-S-E, productions.org. Purpose Productions is my company, through which I do all things. It's just really, really everything from, you know, marketing support to activist work to artistic work. There's a wide range of things that happens under that large, fancy umbrella. Purpose Productions also has a Facebook page. On the website, there are plenty of links to contact me by email. The simplest way is Anae, A-N-A-E, at purposeproductions.org. And, yeah.
Great. Thank you both. A few upcoming events happening in New York and D.C. There's a Dancing for Justice event happening on January 5th, tomorrow at 4 p.m. in Washington, D.C. at DuPont Circle. If you go to the Dancing for Justice Facebook page, there's an event listing with more detailed information about that. On February 21st, I am hosting a collective gathering of artists, dancers, writers, poets, musicians at the Mellon Smack Gallery. It's in Brooklyn, New York, from 3 to 5 p.m. And we are gathering as a form of community caring, speaking, discussing, sharing, creating in the space. So if you're interested in being a part, or if you're interested in joining the mailing list for that event, please contact us at movingspiritsinc@gmail.com or go to the Moving Spirits of Color page or the Tamara LaDonna Moving Spirits page to learn more. in May, this is down the line, but just to prepare, in May of this year on the 30th and the 31st, there's a project happening in the projects, in the housing, public housing projects of Brooklyn called the Projects Authority. And there will be several black dance companies performing there. There will be community stores and restaurants sharing information about their businesses and organizations. There will be community leaders speaking. There will be information about protection for oneself, community policing, free dance classes, and that will be held in Brooklyn at Fulton Park and at Linden Park from 2 to 4 or either 3 to 5 p.m. So just stay tuned. We'll give you more information about that. For anyone in New York City that is going to any protest in the next few days, the number to call in case you are apprehended is 212-679-6108. And that's all the information I need to share about updates. Maxine, do you have any more information for us?
You pretty much covered the resources that I have on hand myself as well, so okay. Thank you for that. Any other?
Great.
And as we said, yep. We'll update the files accordingly, and also encourage listeners to share any resources in the Facebook group as well, if they know of any beyond what was shared in the broadcast also.
Right. So everyone, please be sure to take care of yourselves, rely on each other, support each other. Many, many thanks to Maxine, to Leela, to Nia for sharing with us today. It's been very enlightening, informative, and powerful, everything that you've shared. And I really thank you for taking this time to speak with us.
Thank you for having me. Us.
You're welcome.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you. So our next broadcast will air in February. The date and time is to be announced. And until next time, we're signing off. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your rights. Get up. Stand up for your rights. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your rights. Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight.
All the time. So now we see the light. Watch you go. We go.
your right.